When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Take Command Podcast, Logan Paulson, Craig Hoffman, happy to be with you, breaking down the tape of the Commanders offense and specifically Jaden Daniels' performance. We'd also love to hear from you, HoffmanShow.com/survey. The survey will be open until the end of the year, and you can provide your feedback on the show, and we'd love to hear from you. And by the way, as a special gift for participating in that survey, for letting us know what you think, we're going to give you 50% off the brand new Take Command merch, which is available at the 106.7 The Fan store from Breaking Tea. Okay, Logan, let's talk about Jaden Daniels' performance. We just talked about it through the lens of the sacks. But once you get beyond those, you know, eight plays, there is just so much good on this tape. His ability to make plays with his legs, some of the arm stuff he does, the platform, the reads. I mean, look, the Terry stuff, he's got three big misses, all of which actually hit Terry in the hands. And Terry, I'm sure, would be like, I should catch those. Jaden would say, I got to put them on him. But those are all good reads, good recognition, good decision making. What you said earlier in the pod, you thought this might have been his best game of the year. Why?
Yeah, I think for a lot of the reasons you just said. Like, I was going through and I'm pulling clips for the Command Center show, which airs on Thursday or whatever, Friday. And I'm going to do a breakdown on there talking about this. And so obviously you get the kind of the amazing plays, you know, the touchdown to Terry where he falls down and gets back up and throws it, the third and one where he breaks out and does like a backflip and gets a first down, and the 15 yards. Like, those are plays that everyone's going to recognize and see and be like, wow, this is what makes him special. But to me, it's not even that. It's quite frankly, like, the stuff that he does. Like, there's a corner route that's completed to Terry. It's cover two. So he IDs cover two. He stares down the flat, like the smash or the out, the 5 yard out. The corner, who's kind of in between, steps up to the out. He resets and throws the corner with an absolute laser beam of a throw. Great job, man. Like, absolutely great job. The holding call that Diami gets on, it's like a third and 15 where they throw the screen to whoever it is.
To Terry, yeah.
He checks to that versus nickel pressure. Like, way to be aware of it. They check to a run in the red zone where they get B-Rob a 5 yard gain. Like, again, so seeing, understanding what my answers are versus certain things, great. The touchdown to Terry in terms of ball velocity, just the snap on his release, just in terms of looking healthy. There was a throw over the middle of the field late to OZ where they're running a spot concept to the offensive right. He looks at Demario Davis for a second. He sees that he's pushing to the spot. He delivers an absolute laser beam through a tight window right to OZ, who makes the catch for a first down. The throw to Diami on that high cross, like, putting that ball in a perfect position. Like, and so every single throw, I felt like there was some higher level stuff going on where I'm manipulating coverage. I'm getting the ball out quick. I'm being patient where I need to be patient. I'm hurrying where I need to hurry. And to me, that was the thing that really, like stood out to me in terms of his, how he played the quarterback position. It wasn't like, oh yeah, these big plays are great. And that's obviously true. And there's certain games where you watch him and he's just kind of out there. He's throwing hitches. He's being kind of a game manager. I felt like this game, he elevated the offense in a way that I haven't seen him do probably since Cincinnati, maybe. I don't know. Like it's been a while, and he really, maybe New York, the second New York game, he really did an excellent job and looked to me like a true NFL quarterback. There's a couple times like that one he throws to Bates on that kind of mesh that ends up being a first down where there's a free runner right in the pocket. He narrows his base, gets the ball out right over top of that, kind of with a weird arm angle. And we could go through every single throw, but they all were like that. There was just a simple flat route to Zach, or a simple stick route to Zach. The guy's kind of clouding the window. He pumps to the flat and then comes back and throws the stick with excellent feet, excellent base, excellent accuracy. So he took 8 sacks, which is not great. You don't want that. But the dynamic plays he made, and then the consistent just NFL quarterback stuff, identifying coverage, getting the ball where it needed to go. Like I came out and I was like, dang, this is really good stuff, really high level stuff by him.
Yeah, and he was pretty leveraged in this game, in part because of some protection stuff. Also, there was a lot of zone read in this game where he had to make decisions. And, after the game, I was like, I don't know how well he managed that part. Going back and looking at it, like, there was like 2 that I'm like, that probably, you know, but like, we're talking about like 8 or 10 zone reads in this game where he gives it correctly on some of these that get stuffed because the blocking is bad on the front side. And again, we'll get there, but like he largely made correct reads on that. There in the first half of this game, there were like 4 or 5 plays where they stunted on the right side of the O-line, and Sam Cosmi and Andrew Wiley had trouble passing it off. Cosmi had one of his worst games of his career, frankly, in this game. And so Jaden's taking on pressure and he figures out a way to move around it or get the ball out. And he just consistently had to make higher level plays. And the Saints did a good job in some coverage stuff where he, as you said, moved them just enough and the ball's over an outstretched hands or around a guy, and the snap he has. It's just really good stuff consistently throughout the games, which is why it's kind of weird that the offense got bogged down. It felt like in the second half is like, I don't know if they went 3 and out. I don't think they went 3 and out the entire game.
Yeah.
Like this entire, that's gotta be like a 12 play drive. That's probably 8 or 9 play drive. That's probably like a 10 play drive. I guess the only 3 and out was the end of the first half where the half ended after 3 plays, but it wasn't like they were on a 3rd down and were going to punt. Right. So they just consistently found ways to convert. And sometimes that was also him making plays with his legs. I mean, the 4th and 1 where he just is like, I got to figure out where to go. And he finds it, like the competitiveness of him, you know, Dan talks about all the time, but like you see it.
Like that call that New Orleans had up, was literally like, we're going to pinch the end. You're going to take away the run. We have an overhang player. And then DeMario Davis is going to fit in between. So there literally was like no place to go. If you hand it off, it's going to be a tackle for loss. If you take it, you're going to get tackle for loss. And then for him to kind of Superman figure that out, fake it to the outside, dive over the pile, like that's a big time play on the 45 in your own end, on your own side of the field. Again, like I know he missed these throws, but the reads on those Terry throws at the end of the game, like where he missed them, I understand he missed them, but like he's reading dagger on the first one to Terry. And so you only throw the through or the clear on a dagger versus man-to-man coverage or 2-man. And it's man-to-man coverage and Terry smokes his dude. And so the fact you even got there in terms of read is like just showing how you're seeing the defense. So, and you missed the throw, whatever. The all go that he throws to Terry that just goes off his fingertips because Terry kind of slows down. Like the fact you even saw that, like he just felt like he was seeing it so well, which was great, which was so cool to see. Cause again, like every week, you're like, can he keep getting better? Can he play better? And I felt like this was a game where he just really understood and could visualize what New Orleans was trying to do to him. And he was just kind of able to pick him apart. And, you know, really, really impressive performance by him, I thought.
You talk about the mental toughness too. The last drive of the game is where 2 of those go balls come. And this is also why, like, Cliff, should he have done this, done that? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Cliff seemed to call a pretty good game. And he just stays aggressive and he's finding shots in the 4th quarter. Like, I think that's something too that's really impressive about Cliff is like, he found ways to generate big plays that should have been daggers. And one of them, ironically, on a dagger where they dropped the coverage, as we just mentioned. But like he found ways that were going to be knockout punches and Jaden missed them. barely by a matter of feet, inches. But on so the first the or on the final drive, there's two of the misses to Terry. First one's on a 2nd and 8. It's the all go versus cover 2. And on the very next play, instead of like, oh man, I got to go make a play, I got to get it all back, he just checks the ball down to send it. Like it's a quick play.
Oh yeah, that was takes, nice play.
Takes what's there, send it. You know, rumbles forward. They almost get to the first down. Instead, it's 4th and 1, and then Jaden is able to convert. By the way, Michael Dieter did not have a great game on that particular play. He buried his dude, which is why Jaden was able to jump over.
Oh, nice.
If that's just like a regular block, there's nowhere to go. Dieter just absolutely pancakes his dude, and Jaden jumps over the pancake, which is a phrase. Jumps over the pancake, a phrase I never thought I'd say on a podcast, but here we are. So they get the first down. On the very next play, that is the next Terry go ball that he misses. And next play is a run for B-Rob. Now it's 3rd and 3. Bang, little easy one to Bates. They get another first down. He didn't get like, oh my God, I got to get it all back. Yeah. Oh my God, I have to do too much. Instead, he's just like, all right, missed opportunity. That sucks. I'll get him next time. But I'm not going to go create the next time. I'll wait till it comes to me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and again, like in this game where he took 8 sacks, and the national media, like I heard PFF talking about, oh, this is why people worry about taking sacks because it kills drives, and I get it, but I think if you were to watch the game the way we've watched it, you'd see all the positive stuff. Like on the play to Terry, you know, the first touchdown that he throws where it's just this Tampa 2 look, he like takes the ball down and runs the perimeter, like versus that look versus that route concept, which is just smash 2 corners back over the ball. And then 2 sits on the outside. Like you just throw the ball right to the back. He'll turn around, catch it, and you run right at the Tampa player who's backing up into the defense. And so they call that same play later in the game. And I'd be darned, man, if he just didn't catch the snap right away. B-Rob sneaks through. There's a pressure coming. There's an unblocked guy right over the top of that dude to B-Rob for a 9-yard gain. Like even in the context of the game, like just he just seemed like he knew what was happening. And there was a couple, like we talked about, on the zone pressure where he takes that sack from the corner, like where he obviously got or whatever. But I'd say on the whole, you know, what did he have? 49 dropbacks. Like he made really good decisions about when to scramble, about taking care of the football on a lot of them. And it, again, just a really impressive performance. And I think, like to your point on that last little sequence of drive there, you were talking about like that ball to Diami on that kind of deep crosser is just special, quite frankly, you know, and again, it gets taken back because of a hold, which is a good call. It's an annoying call, but it's a good call. And I can't say enough positive things about his performance outside of the sacks.
Yeah. Which brings us to, I guess, the last little piece, which isn't really about Jaden, but why he was so leveraged in this game, why he had to drop back so many times. The run game was just really rough in this one. And I came out of this game, I actually caught myself on the post-game show. And it's easier for me to have to try to be the rational one when Chris Russell is in your box as opposed to you. I just get to be a rational radio man when I'm sitting here next to you. When it's Russell, I'm like, all right, one of us has got to have our hands on the wheel here at 10-2. But I was like, there are too many times that I've come out of games thinking that Cliff should have done X. And then I watched the tape and I'm like, nope, Cliff was right. I'm an idiot. What am I talking about? So I was like, I feel like right now they should have run the ball more, but I want to see how it played out. And after watching it back, I get why Cliff, he didn't really abandon the run, because there still are like some good gains late in this game, but they didn't lean into the run in the way that I thought they would, but it's because they didn't run the ball like we thought they would.
Yeah. No, I think that's 100% right. And going back and watching the film, specifically the running back runs, obviously when you look at Jaden's scrambles that really elevates the total. But when you look at Brian Robinson's runs, it was really messy up front. Very, very messy. And what I mean by that is you got guys losing one-on-ones. You know, one of the five guys or one of the six guys, if you include Bates. Sinnott had a couple losses too where you're losing like in a situation and it negatively affects the outcome of the game. They all kind of took turns doing that. Like, no one had a perfect game in that regard. If there's one guy who played well in the run game, was Wiley. You know, like, he didn't really have a lot of mental mistakes, did a really nice job, didn't have a lot of physical losses. But everybody else, man, there's a bunch of that. I thought New Orleans also came out and lined up in some kind of funky fronts. Like, I actually had to call one of my O-line buddies, and I was like, what would you actually call the spacing on this front? He's like, I call this the jam front, you know, where you cover the three guys on the inside. I'm like, but there's a four-eye, there's a backside shade. And he's like, this is jam in principle, but, like, they're fudging you a little bit to kind of mess with the angles and stuff. And so that's really hard to do on the fly with a backup center. Like, getting that stuff targeted is tough, and they did that a couple times. And then also I thought they, you know, when they're running new looks, new runs, they didn't have the details all the way locked in on some of those. You get guys unblocked because of rules and counts. So there was a kind of a comedy of errors in this game in terms of, you know, Dieter's going the wrong way on a couple plays. The snap's off, so you can't get the zone read.
The timing was really funky, too, on those. Like, Dieter's moving before everybody. I mean, he's the guy snapping it, so of course. But, like, the harmony that an O-line moves with and that is there with Biotish, it was not there with Dieter.
Yeah, and so again, like, this isn't one guy. This isn't like, so-and-so played really bad. It's like everybody didn't play their best game. You know, Dieter had some issues. He also had some good stuff like you talked about in the 4th-and-1. But on the whole, this was maybe the messiest performance they've had as an offensive line. Like, even when you watch the Philly game, the guys are getting beat, but they're going to the right guys. They're in good battles. Here, they're kind of going the wrong way. They're letting guys run through gaps. Like, they're getting kind of stoned in the line of scrimmage. Stuff that we haven't really seen from this group. And I will say the New Orleans defensive line specifically played really well. You know, their two ends. We talked about Granderson. We talked about Chase Young. We talked about, what's his name? Number 94 for them. Cam Jordan, number 98. They're huge edge players. And they set physical edges. And then you look at John Ridgeway in the interior. He played a great game. And number 93 for them had the silent count timed up perfectly. He's penetrating gaps. He's splitting double teams. We can't get to the linebacker. Like, it was a little bit of a slugfest in there. And kudos to them. They did a great job. And it was for all of the reasons we just talked about.
Yeah, and I mean, credit to the Saints too. Like, Darren Rizzi, this is good tape for him overall in terms of, can you inspire a team to play physically on both sides of the ball?
Yeah.
There are some absolute slobber knocker hits in this game. Like, interior, not on ball carriers, but so, like, you probably didn't see them on TV, but there's one play where Bates, and like, John Bates will hit the F out of somebody.
He's been, and I've said this to you before, like, maybe, I don't know if on air, but like in passing, like, he's had a really, just a physical, kind of tough guy, blue-collar year, maybe one of the best blocking tight ends in the NFL, like, no joke. And I remember the player you're talking about gets
wrecked in the hole.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen Bates get hit by that. Like, not just stunned where it's stalemate. He gets knocked back into the back 3-4 yards. And we'll talk about the defense quickly here in a second. We're going to do more of the defense on the Thursday pod as we talk about some of the changes they made and how those can translate to the Eagles matchup. But we'll do a quick buzz of the defense for this game. But, like, there's a play late in the game. I think it's the last drive of the game where New Orleans is still running it and just being like, hey, you're going to give us this. And I think it's MVS just absolutely escorts Quan Martin out the club. And you're like, whoa, yeah. That's serious. And that doesn't happen to guys like Quan Martin. So I think there is probably stuff where Quinn on tape is getting in front of them yesterday on Tell the Truth Monday. And is like, guys, we can't get out physical like this. Yeah. You have to, at some point, as, you know, independent, neutral analysts here, be like, yeah, that's true. But also hat tip to the Saints on blowing some of this stuff up with pure physicality.
Yeah, and I think that's it. Like, in some ways, I think it's good that it happened this week.
Yeah.
Because that's how Philly plays. They play very similar to that. And so you got to make sure your mouthpiece is in. You got all the screws on your helmets are nice and tight. Make sure that's nice and fit because it's going to be one of those games. And so I think it's good that you got a taste of that this week because I'm speaking from experience. You know, I've been blown up in the hole. I've been knocked down. I've been thrown to the ground, and that feels bad. It doesn't feel good. You want to make sure you're improving on a film, and I would approach that next week with a little bit more of a mindset. And so I think it's good. It's good you kind of got beat. It's good that you won, but also kind of got beat up because then you can kind of refocus and say, hey, like, the reason we were so dominant versus Tennessee is because we ran the ball so effectively. Like, we need to bring that type of mindset every single week. And I think it's also important to note that I think you see the importance of Tyler Biadasz, not only as a player, obviously very significant there in terms of targeting protections, targeting runs, all those different things, but also just in terms of the leadership. Like, he's a guy that when you're on the sideline, like, I'll be, you know, I pace back and forth between possessions and sometimes I'll see him. And he's a guy that maybe doesn't say a lot, but is very, very demonstrative when he's talking to people. And you can tell that he's kind of like the goose at the head of the V. Like, he's leading everybody forward. And I think, not having him out there was significant. And I think that's something else we got to talk about. We'll save it for the preview show, but hopefully he's back. But you lose Ertz, you lose maybe Jeremy Chinn for a week with a concussion. Like, this becomes a little bit dicey in terms of making sure you got enough pass catchers on offense, and, you know, losing one of your better players on defense is going to be tough too. So,
yeah, the injuries definitely are a big, and you saw him in the game too. Like, some of the stuff that where I think they could have gotten some extra conversions, or, you know, that play in the red zone that we talked about, like, that's a Zach Ertz play. And unfortunately, that showed up. Chin's absence showed up in a big way on a couple of plays late in this game. We also had the Marshawn Lattimore addition, which changed a bunch of stuff. So let's talk about the defense real quick before we get on out of here.